Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a looming European financial crisis as the summit of 27 heads of EU states in Brussels failed to come to an agreement, putting off a possible resolution until next Wednesday. With Greece already in collapse and Spain, Portugal and Italy teetering, it is looking more and more likely that the contagion will spread to the United States and deepen and prolong the recession we are stuck in, making the Republicans, whose policies are accelerating our economic decline, more likely to be elected. Dimitri Papadimitriou, who just returned from Europe, joins us. He is the president of the Levy Economics Institute and Jerome Levy Professor of Economics at Bard College. He has testified on a number of occasions before Senate and House committees of the U.S. Congress and is a distinguished scholar at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. Then finally, we'll speak with a professor of political economy at Northwestern University, Jeffrey Winters, the author of a new book, Oligarchy. He has studied the oligarchs of ancient Greece and Rome, as well as contemporary Indonesia and the Philippines, and by comparison finds America's oligarchs unusually greedy. We will examine the American right's fetishizing of the wealthy and powerful as its contempt for the weak and needy becomes more apparent. For the last couple of years on Background Briefing, we have questioned how much our democracy has succumbed to the power of concentrated wealth, so much so that listeners have complained that I was using the word oligarchy and plutonomy too much. But now, with a 99% movement spreading across the country and around the world, it is clear to a growing number of people that America's oligarchs and their political hirelings control our economy and own our politics, effectively disenfranchising the majority of American voters. And joining us now is Dimitri Papadimitriou, who is president of the Levy Economics Institute and Jerome Levy Professor of Economics at Bard College. He has testified on a number of occasions in hearings of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives committees of the U.S. Congress and was vice chairman of the Trade Deficit Review Commission of the U.S. Congress and was a member of the Competitive Policy Council's sub-council on capital allocation. He's also a distinguished scholar at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dimitri Papadimitriou.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you've just returned from Europe, and on Sunday the European ministers met, and apparently they're going to meet again. This is the 27 heads of state of the EU states. They're apparently going to meet again on Wednesday, and the feeling is that this Eurozone crisis, the economics have always raged ahead of the politicians. In other words, the markets are too fast and the politicians are too slow. Is there anything to indicate that this is going to change?
I'm afraid not. The uninspired leadership from the European leaders will continue. You know, everybody had his or her eyes to the today's summit, only to be disappointed, to postpone the decision for next Wednesday, only again to be postponed until something could be announced on the November 3rd when the G20 meetings are held. And this is again the inability from Chancellor Merkel as well as President Sarkozy, who don't seem to agree on what the solution for the Eurozone crisis is. A number of proposals have been put forth from either side, which are not acceptable because that will impose some difficulties on the banks, both in France, as well as on the private sector investors who will take a much bigger haircut than was originally proposed in their July sort of summit, asking for the private sector investor to take a 21% haircut for the Greek bonds, now speaking about a 50 to 60% haircut, which is substantial given what the holdings of the French banks are and the rest of the Eurozone member state banks. But there isn't any solution, you know, because what we're dealing is with the inability to understand what the real problem is, which is that you cannot solve the problem with this level of financing. It's not possible.
Well, there's a tremendous gulf, surely, Dimitri, Papa Dimitri, between the 100 billion that they're talking about, euros, and what apparently is required, which is estimates are between 1.3 trillion and 2.6 trillion.
Yes, you know, the 1.7 trillion that has been actually mentioned is highly inadequate if you were to take only the periphery countries. And assume that there may be a sovereign default because of the contagion that will come about from the inability to actually ring-fence Greece, if that were ever possible, you have others that will then follow. You know the pressures that we have seen on two of the largest economies in the Eurozone, which is Italy and Spain. Now, these are substantial exposures of sovereign debt. And you cannot solve it with 1 trillion euros. You are talking about $3 and even more trillion. And, you know, a number of proposals have been put forth to leverage the European Financial Stability Facility. You know, leverage is great on the way up, but on the way down is extremely painful. And we have seen this in the United States of America.
Again, I'm speaking with Dimitri Papadimitriou, who is president of the Levy Economics Institute and the Jerome Levy Professor of Economics at Bard College. He's just returned from Europe, where on Sunday, 27 heads of the EU states met, apparently didn't come to an agreement, have said that there's another meeting on Wednesday. Meanwhile, there's a great deal of concern that the political authorities are simply not keeping pace with the economic crisis. And what do you make of the collapse of the Dexia Bank, French-Belgian bank?
It's not surprising to me, actually, that the bank has collapsed. This is the second time that it's been bailed out. Of course, now it's been broken up, and therefore there is possibility of at least one part of it surviving, the consumer part of it, that's left with Belgium. The exposure of these banks and insurance companies are dramatic. When you begin to have an inability from the core to solve the problem, we will see other financial institutions actually experiencing this type of problems. We know that the French banks are worried. The announcement that they should have a 9% Tier 1 capital with any possibility of a 50% or 60% haircut from the Greek bonds, they would need to raise a lot of money. You know, the estimates, as you correctly pointed out earlier, may be much larger than what they assume of the 100 billion euros, could be as high as 300 billion euros. So the question then is, would they be able to raise these funds privately with increases in their capital for the private sector, or would they seek support from the respective governments? Well, some banks don't really want to receive any support from their governments, because that means that there are certain restrictions in terms of pay and other kinds of expansion, other kinds of things that private institutions like banks don't want to deal with. On the other hand, they will have to, because the haircut is going to be more than 50 or 60%. And in my estimation, we're looking for a total default from the Greek state. It's not possible to service a loan, given that the economy has been deteriorating sharply. The estimates that somehow or other, miraculously, the economy will get out of recession 2 years from now and return to some growth pattern, it's actually pure fantasy. So we are looking for a serious problem. And, of course, that's not going to stay there because, as we know, the Portuguese deficit is actually very high. It's close to 10% last year, and the improvements are not going to be great there either. And Spain isn't actually showing any growth, let alone that there are revisions in the growth rates for France and also for Germany. So the more they wait to solve this problem, the worse it will get. And we're talking a severe crisis that may actually lead to a global crisis, not only limited to the Eurozone. And if I may continue, there are about $3 billion that the American financial institutions are basically exposed to, half of it of which is from the mutual funds that have invested in European banks, and the other half is the other financial institutions. No wonder you see that both President Obama as well as Tim Geithner are urging for a solution to the European crisis. There is something to be said about the contagion on the other side of the pond.
Well, particularly when American banks are heavily exposed in Spain, Ireland, and Italy. And Italy, apparently, at this meeting on Sunday of the European ministers, apparently their concern was expressed that the budget cuts passed by the Italian parliament didn't go far enough.
Yes.
And that Italy needs to borrow $250 billion next year just to refinance its existing debts. You've just laid out, Papadimitriou, a fairly broad menu of weak points. You say that Greece has already fallen off the cliff and the other ones are poised on the cliff. Are they all going to – is the dam going to all break at once or in stages?
I wish I could say that I see some omens of optimism, but I don't. They don't need to wait for Wednesday to solve the problem. They know what the problem is, and they know that the solution can actually not come about with just kicking the can down the road. You know, in a sense of a comparison, the United States of America, the federal government controls 20% of GDP. The European Parliament controls 1% of GDP. How is it possible then to stabilize that economy? Either you have United States of Europe or you have an arrangement that basically leads to winners and losers. And the winners are those who play their cards right, such as Germany, and have very good current account balances. And they're dependent on those who do very badly, and they have worse account balances. So Greece and the rest of the periphery have worse account balances. But, Germany has great account balances. So, the Greek problem, to put it in some kind of a comparison, it's really very little in comparison to what Germany had to spend to unify the east part of Germany.
But the German people have, at least their political authorities, have not wanted to deal honestly with them because there's a great deal of anger. And the real divide in Europe, even though Slovakia was the holdout in the last political deal that had to be done in this cumbersome mechanism that they have. The real divide is north-south, isn't it?
And
there's a kind of cultural isn't there a kind of cultural prejudice that the northerners have about the southerners?
Absolutely correct. And if you actually support that, which Chancellor Merkel has done this by going to the parliament and say that I am not really your leader, you will decide what I will agree. Whether it will be the rescue package for Greece or the expansion of the European Financial Stability Facility or even the European Financial Mechanism. So on the basis of this, you don't have anyone who actually will say, look, I have a vision, and the vision is the same as Herbert Kohl. He's basically, and François Mitterrand were actually the two heads that developed the Eurozone and urged that there should be not only a financial union, but ultimately a political union. Well, if you want to tell the German public that Greeks are profligate, they don't work, or the same thing for the Portuguese and the rest, well, of course, you don't expect any support to come from the German public. It's impossible, especially if you basically don't have a majority in parliament. You're actually a coalition, and you have to cater to the needs of those coalition members.
So, Dimitri Papadimitriou, I mean, obviously our audience is concerned that the contagion will spread, and this bank that Dexia, this French-Belgian bank that just collapsed, apparently it had substantial dealings with the J.P. Morgan Chase and
yes.
Goldman Sachs. So, and there's never any transparency in these deals, is there, really, in terms of who's really exposed? The contagion itself, though, I mean, the sickness itself started, surely, with Lehman Brothers, and that set an example where vast amounts of private debt are turned into public debt. In other words, irresponsible bankers get into trouble, and then the government bails them out. And it's happened here. We began this malignant trend, if you will. It happened in Ireland. It's happened in all the other countries as well. How do you stop this? This seems to be the new normal, isn't it?
You're absolutely on spot on this. It started here, and that had to do with the fact that there was no supervision and no regulation of financial institutions. And therefore, they expanded in areas that they actually did not know what the risk was. They could not calculate the risk. So now you see why the Federal Reserve is trying to pick up the pieces and extended all these swap agreements for dollars with the ECB because of the exposure of the United States banks to those European banks. And therefore, you know, we're trying to do whatever we can do here, but you cannot do anything unless there's strict regulation supervision, what it is that banks, our banks here in the United States, can do and cannot do. We can see, for instance, that the Dodd-Frank bill is basically dead on arrival. I'm not optimistic that anything will happen. You know, we're talking about the Volcker rules, and the Volcker rules now have been stopped. And they become more complicated, that even Volcker said, well, you banks have made it so complicated that now it's your fault, basically, that you cannot control it.
Yeah, but what's real simple is returning to Glass-Steagall, right? And nobody wants to take that seriously?
Well, a different kind of Glass-Steagall, not really Glass-Steagall. Well, Glass-Steagall was, you know, back in a long time ago.
Sure, but something...
Years. So you need to have a different kind of structure of regulation and supervision that will understand that you cannot impinge in the market because financial innovation will take place, but you should be able to have a regulatory structure that understands what the financial instruments are that are being sold and bought in the market.
Well, just in closing then, Dimitri Papadimitriou, having just returned from Europe and the meetings took place on Sunday, they were inconclusive. Now they're having another meeting on Wednesday. And as you pointed out, they know what the problems are, but they don't seem to be able to grapple with them or get their hands around them. We know that the U.S. is exposed, that the president's concerned, and so is the Secretary of Treasury. It seems to me that this is not going well, and it hasn't been going well for the last couple of years. And the longer that the political authorities dither, the worse the problem is, and they could have solved these problems years ago for pennies on the dollar. And I just have this terrible sinking feeling that we're drifting towards a deeper recession.
And I agree with you. I think that the probability of having a recession in Europe with spillover effects in the United States and the rest of the world is very, very high. I don't know what the number is. But the fact of the matter is that everyone is concerned. We know that Barack Obama and now the Chinese leader is after the European leaders to do something about it. So my suspicion is that the G20 meetings are going to be actually quite embarrassing for those for the leaders of Europe who haven't been able to solve their problem. I know that the BRICS, have been actually raising their voice, Brazil, India, and China. So my suspicion is that the more pressure that is being put on Merkel and Sarkozy and the rest might bring something about. Although I would say that I haven't always been a Cassandra, and it's very difficult to actually change since I don't see the omens out there.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Dmitry
Papadimitriou. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dmitry Papadimitriou, who is president of the Levy Economics Institute and Jerome Levy Professor of Economics at Bard College. He has testified on a number of occasions in hearings of the Senate and House of Representatives committees of the U.S. Congress, and was vice chairman of the Trade Deficit Review Commission of the U.S. Congress, and was a member of the Competitive Policy Council Subcommittee on Capital Allocation. He's also a distinguished scholar at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about this brand new book, Oligarchy.
If we're only mouths to feed, I know no matter what you say, there's some debts you'll never pay. Working for the church while your family dies, you take what they give you and you keep it inside.